spiritual life is a life where you're experiencing a change of heart. You know, you're experiencing, you know, a strong desire to please the Lord, to know the Lord, you know, to develop a relationship with the Lord that is protective, that is nourishing, that is fulfilling, that you can actually, you know, experience, you know, real satisfaction and happiness in. And that is real spiritual life. The things I described are on the highest level of the development of the soul's spiritual perfection. But that's not where we start. I'm just giving you the ideas, and then you start with the first step. Don't worry about the goal up there. The goal is the next step. And then the goal after that is the next step. And that's all.
Hey guys, Ruben here and the Breaking Trail podcast. We are back with yet another talk about the spiritual life, the importance and the meaning of spiritual life. We always advertise following a spiritual lifestyle, so we wanted to really discuss the meaning of that, what it means so that you know, and what will really satisfy you, which process will actually bring you to your goal of happiness, and which will just lead you around in circles. So spiritual life is a change of heart. Having that change of heart is the only thing that can really satisfy us, and no other mental change will do that, or any drug-induced way of feeling and being. So we're gonna look at what spiritual life really is today and go to the deepest meaning. This is a stepwise thing. So whatever you hear, take it in, reflect on it, contemplate on it, and then gradually take one step further towards that highest perfection of a loving relationship to the Supreme, finally. This is episode 41.
So we're going to be breaking trail tomorrow. We had snow here today. And
really?
I think it's going to be quite a bit in the mountains.
Oh, wow.
I'm not sure how much, but
wow,
enough that, and it'll be us first tracks because it's snow today and we'll be out there tomorrow. So nobody will be in front of us.
I don't know. Awesome.
Maybe some parts. We're not doing a big thing tomorrow. We're doing just from the house here. Just, I don't like to do big things right after a snow because that's when snow moves.
No moose?
Snow moves.
Oh, snow moves.
Moves.
I thought you said there's no moose.
Snow
moves. Wow. Yeah, I see.
Yeah,
totally,
yeah.
Understand.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was.
Then it's supposed to snow Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday as well. So,
Wow.
We'll see.
Is it that much snow there now that snow moves?
Well, after a big, heavy snow, it can, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. No, got respect for that.
Early season is tricky. A lot of people think there's no problem because there's not much snow, but there's also no bondage. And a lot of times it's just sitting on bare ground and it,
mm-hmm.
or sitting on grassy stuff or something mm-hmm. like that. It just slips off.
Mm.
You know,
true.
People get caught out. They think, oh, it's the early season. There's no worries, no danger. And there is.
Yeah, because it's icy under. It's all frozen under, and then you have snow on top, and it's just, I can understand that. It's just sliding.
And the snow is up there now, like we were up there last week, and it's all sugar snow because it snowed, and then it got super cold, like for, 10, 12 days?
Uh-huh.
And so it just turns into granular snow, just those little ball bearings, really. And so that stuff just rotten for the rest of the season. So there's that weak layer on the bottom. It happens every winter a lot, you know, just snows early and then just gets really cold and no snow for days.
Right, right, right.
And that hoar frost and that granular snow develops, and then your snow's on top of that, and that's there for the rest of the year.
Right, right. Wow. And then that's, yeah, like you said, like bearings giving you.
Yeah, like ball bearings.
Ball bearings.
Runs away.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's how it is in the mountains in winter.
Yeah, you got to be careful.
Yeah.
We were at the, you know, the camper at our caravan this weekend. But I've heard that that place is the place in the whole Europe where it snows and rains the least. So we didn't have a lot of snow.
Really?
Yeah.
In all Europe?
That's what I've been told. I haven't Googled it myself, but I've been told. So I don't know, it might be a myth, but
wow.
It might be high on the list, which is funny because you think Norway is just rainy, but there are places in Norway where there's almost no rain. Yeah.
Ah.
You know, you have Bergen and then you have the opposites.
Bergen's underwater, man.
Yeah. That's what I mean.
Bergen. And Buda is terrible. Buda is really bad.
Oh, really? I didn't know that. Yeah, maybe that's true.
Maybe not the volume of rain, but it stays in the winter right around +1 or 2 and -3 or 4.
Yeah.
So it rains and then it freezes.
Yeah.
And then it rains and it freezes. So it's always just some bad conditions. Ice all the time and just not nice. No, it's not pleasant.
Yeah. That's how it is. You know.
So what is the topic today?
Yeah,
other than the weather.
Other than the weather and snow and breaking trail. Old usual. I don't know if you've read something or if you have some idea, but I have some idea and I've something we could discuss. So I don't know if you have anything on your mind. But
well, you said you got something, so I'm just waiting for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just give me 1 second. What's that? Slava says, he can hear background noise. Yeah, it's raining here a lot, you know, apart from...
Oh, that's what it
speaking
is.
Speaking about the weather.
It's raining.
It's on the roof.
Yeah, you know. I hear it. It's raining on the roof.
Yeah.
It's
you know, I'm right by the roof, that's why there's no insulation. Well, there's some insulation, but it's not like maybe I can make it
it's all right. That's nature background, man. That's good.
Yeah.
Rain in the background. That's the mood.
Okay, let's have it then. Yeah. No, it's I was thinking there was something that we discussed last week that perhaps could be because it's more and more becoming apparent to me, or I'm more and more exposed to it. This idea of, as last week we spoke about responsibility in spiritual life, but I was thinking more about this idea of what spiritual life actually is, what spiritual actually means, and what that entails. Just yesterday there was. We had some guests over here, and one of the guests, he started speaking about, it's nice in a way, he said that he had these benefits of meditation, but he said, he explained how it was, you know, he could feel the neurons from his heart out to his body, and how that, like, the body expansion, and he was just so happy and joyous and feeling that in that mood, and then there was another person there, and she was really interested in that and was really amazed, like, wow, can you tell me more? And, you know, that must be so cool to have that effect of, and or how long did you meditate to make that happen and to have that effect, you know? And that's one thing that I've sort of been exposed to. And another is just like, yeah, some people, they come, they join us for our meditations, and they think they become disappointed after the meditation because sometimes they don't feel it. You know, they don't fully become immersed in it and have that very, very relaxed, I don't know, whatever they expect feeling. And then they become disappointed and feel like, well, this wasn't what I was looking for.
Right. So I'm just... Yeah, see, this is the advertised version of spiritual life.
Yeah.
You know, like the concept that it's cosmic, that it's filled with, you know, all these higher vibrations and...
Yeah.
You know, like your guest said, some neurons from the heart or whatever. You know, it's supposed to be some physical and emotional result for it to be real.
Mm.
And if they're not exactly getting that, which is what they've envisioned in their mind, then like you say, they say, well, you know, I'm disappointed it didn't work. I didn't feel anything and so on. You know, and this is how it's been promoted, you know. Well, there's one side, the Western religion idea of just join the team, you know, and you're saved and maybe you'll have some feelings of rapture or, you know, and then there's segments of that concept where people talk in tongues and get overwhelmed by some higher or spiritual force that makes it so they roll around on the ground or all kinds of different things, you see. And so spiritual life is promoted in that way many times.
Yeah, exactly.
And if you don't experience that, then it's not spiritual. Or you didn't reach it, like that girl said, how long did you have to meditate to reach that point?
Exactly. Which,
you know, and I want to reach that too. In other words, they want some euphoric experience, some, you know, that kind of like the idea of just taking, you know, a drug, you know, whether it's the potion from South America. I never can remember the name.
Oh yeah, the ayahuasca.
Yeah, ayahuasca or,
ayahuasca,
you know, LSD or, you know, whatever the peyote or, you know, whatever the drug is to put you in that altered state.
Yeah.
You know, an altered consciousness. And therefore, they think that's spiritual.
Because it's...
But, yeah, because it's promoted like that.
And it's different from...
It's a subtler level of material experience. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. We definitely will not deny that. It's not just everyday humdrum life. It's another level, if you could say, of material experience. Mm. But that doesn't make it spiritual. Mm. You know, spiritual life is a life where you're experiencing a change of heart. You know, you're experiencing, you know, a strong desire to please the Lord, to know the Lord, you know, to develop a relationship with the Lord that is protective, that is nourishing, that is fulfilling, that you can actually, you know, experience, you know, real satisfaction and happiness in. And that is real spiritual life. And it always is promoted, you know, by the great teachers of the truth as the goal of human life. And so you take the great masters, the bhakti masters, in other words, the masters of prema, Krishna prema, a love for God, you know, not the mystic yoga masters, because they got another whole dimension of spiritual definition and experience. But if you talk to the bhakti masters, then they're always talking about the intense feeling of humility, and feeling lower than the straw in the street and feeling at the feet of the Lord. And when they have, and they definitely do reach a level of very, very high emotional upheaval, really. It's called symptoms of ecstatic love. But this is because of the love in the heart. It's not anything to do with chakras. It's not with brain waves and neurons from the heart or, you know, kundalini experiences and those kinds of things. This is it's called symptoms of ecstatic love for God. And it describes in the more in-depth, you know, intense scriptures of physical changes of the body that take place, you know, shedding of tears or, you know, hair standing on end or, you know, falling down and rolling on the ground or laughing in ecstasy 1 minute and crying the next and all kinds of things. But this is not from some concocted practice or, you know, so on. It's just the heart is erupting with love, and therefore it manifests in the physical, you know, in the mind, in the body. And, you know, many people have had some intense feelings of love for another person in this life now. Could be your wife, could be your child, could be, you know, any loved one, whoever it is. And if it's a very, very deep, loving relationship, there's been, you know, symptoms of those ecstatic symptoms of love for God. You know, you're crying, you're laughing, you know, you can't contain yourself. And at the moment, next moment, you feel completely overwhelmed with fear that you might lose this person. And, you know, you're hanging on to this person. And then the next minute, you're dancing with the person. Mm. You know, it's all over the place.
Yeah.
And this is just perverted reflection. This is like tiny, minuscule drops of love.
Of the real, you know, real thing.
But the idea is the same. And this wasn't brought about by some deep, you know, meditation practice or by taking some, you know, drug or other substance. It was just the condition of the heart. You know, you see the one you love and you run to that person. You see, you fall into their arms. You know, you're crying, you're laughing all at the same time. You know, and the body can be trembling and shaking and uncontrollable in many different ways. So that's, like I say, just a minuscule reflection of ecstatic love for God. So love is real spiritual life. And if you have that love, then your whole life is to please the one you love, you know, to serve the one you love, to put yourself in the complete hands of that one you love. So this, of course, we're now talking about the Supreme Lord. And I'm your servant. Do with me as you will. You know, you can embrace me. You can handle me roughly. This is what Lord, you know, Gauranga said. You can embrace me. You can handle me roughly, whatever you want to do. You know, just I am yours. And my whole life is in your hands. That's spiritual life. And then, you see, and that's the nature of the soul.
Yeah. But for, I mean, that's maybe someone that might seem maybe far-fetched for someone who's not come to that trust and that developing that relationship. But so I guess people are, and at least in the start, could it be a way into that or towards that to focus more on that sensation? Or because I just mean that seems maybe like a huge step for people. Where's the...
Well, Well, it is. It's not something you jump into and it happens. It's a gradual evolution of the relationship.
Yeah.
You know, just like with a person in this world. We always go back to practical examples, you know.
Yeah.
That usually, I mean, probably almost never do you have those deep, intense relationships with, you know, some person you love in the very beginning. It was a gradual development.
Yeah.
You see, even a child's development of love with the parent, you know, they come out of the womb and the natural love is there, but it grows and they become more and more, you know, intimate and dependent, and on it goes.
Mm.
So it's gradual. But the bhakti process is the process that makes it so gradually this develops.
Mm.
See? But it's not like you're waiting for that and you're, well, I'm not feeling that yet.
Yeah, yeah.
You see? that's still very self-serving. And reality is that's where we're at. You know?
Yeah.
It's all about me. What am I getting out of this?
Yeah.
You know? And that's why they like, you know, the mystical experiences or the hallucinations or the, you know, the feelings of euphoria,
mm-hmm.
and so on. It's all about what I get from this.
Yeah. Yeah. You know?
You may be familiar with, I'm only familiar with it philosophically, but the drug ecstasy was developed, you know, to make it so, you know, a chemically induced feeling of love could be experienced very easy by just taking a pill.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you know, it had, I don't know how it worked somehow, and, you know, on the different, you know, areas of the brain or whatever it was. I don't know the details. But people actually felt like they were just absorbed in love for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, ecstasy was the name given because you felt ecstatic. You're so happy. You're so up. You're so, you know, incredibly moved. And that was the favorite drug of the rave parties, you know, when they were so popular. I guess they're still around to some degree. But,
I guess,
you know, because the music was on that kind of level of vibration, so to speak. And the music and the drug combined just brought about that whole madness, you know, of feeling so good and so wonderful and so loving and so ecstatic and so, you know, just otherworldly.
Yeah.
And that's what people want, but it's the artificial version. This is the point. And it's still self-serving. It's not like, what can I do for you? It's what you can give to me. What is this meditation going to give me?
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Oh, it didn't give me what I wanted, so therefore I'm going to try another method. See? So, but it's gradual evolution to take the focus away from ourself.
Yeah, exactly.
And put it on the Supreme Self, you know.
Mm.
So that's why in Scripture it describes the lifestyle that is pleasing. There is a lifestyle that is described very clearly in the Vedic scriptures that is pleasing. And so you try to engage, if you're trying to follow this teaching, you're trying to engage in those lifestyle practices on a very regular basis with the faith and understanding that this is pleasing. So our chanting of mantras is described very clearly by Lord Gauranga himself, the Supreme Lord, in his most recent incarnation, and by our spiritual teachers, that chanting the holy names is very, very pleasing. It's the most pleasing activity.
Mm-hmm.
So with that understanding, you practice that. You chant the holy names. And it's even more pleasing to gather together and chant the holy names. Congregationally, that's stated.
And
so therefore you you try to do that.
And pleasing in this way means kind of like it will nurture that relationship. It will cultivate and make that relationship closer.
Closer. Yeah. What's pleasing to the person you're trying to develop the relationship with
will make it
is what endears you to that person.
Yeah.
And so that becomes the focus. And it's not all about, well, what am I getting out of this? You know, although we're still in that I, me, mine consciousness, so that will be there, but it's not promoted. It's not the philosophy. It's not the goal.
Yeah.
And so you try to more listen to the teachings of the truth rather than your own self-motivated agenda.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But
I guess that's just, like you say, I understand how that, like, from the outside, love is the goal. The real thing is the goal. But to, for a person who's completely new, and maybe, I mean, you're sitting here listening, or I'm listening to this podcast, and I'm quite sure that there is no supreme person, or at least I'm not sure that there is. Like, there's no faith, there is no relationship there. Like, it seems that's like a big, big step to take to do that for
but
him.
But it is a big step.
Yeah.
That's why we're not in our, you know, introductory classes to people. We're not talking about all this.
Yeah.
We're saying, chant these mantras. Mm. Hear these mantras. And they're very, you know, beneficial for you.
Yeah.
They come from the spiritual world. They have spiritual potency. They purify. They nourish, you know, and all kinds of other benefits. And here's a simple technique you can use to bring them into your life. That's all.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know. But what we're saying now is just to clarify that, you know, what real spiritual life is. That was the question you asked, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just trying to answer the question, what's real spiritual life is.
Yeah,
I see. And, you know, people will have their idea of spiritual life according to what they've heard, who they've associated with,
and
what their desires are.
Exactly, what they want to follow. Because they could see this as just some school of thought is thinking this, but this is kind of like the old traditional school of thought or some you know, religious stuff. But the higher thing is the new age thing, you know, and the sensation-based, the all the feelings, and, you know, it's...
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Well, you know, everybody now especially is exposed to everything.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, by the internet and all the different social media platforms and et cetera.
Yeah.
So, you know, you get more and more people that create their own idea of what spiritual life is. And
yeah.
But we just present, you know, this teaching.
Yeah.
And... you know, there are people who have heard it and understood it or accepted it to the degree that, okay, this sounds right for me. I'm going to do this.
Yeah.
And that's not many people. out of the number of people who hear it, this group that I just referred to is very in the minority.
Yeah.
But what can we do?
Yeah.
But we're not putting a person down and saying, okay, well, this is no good and that is no good. If that's what you want to do, you can. You know, at least there is some interest in something beyond everyday nuts and bolts material, eat, sleep, mate, and defend.
Yeah.
You know, there's some interest to go a little bit past that. So we congratulate you for that interest. And, you know, here's some information for you to consider. And hope that, you know, they will take it, you know, somewhat seriously or let it change their life and so on.
Well, and yeah.
And like to the back to the concept of chan anyway, no matter where you're at.
Right. Yeah.
Chan anyway.
But and I guess why is it then that people are like that interested in the in the externals, you know? And same with meditation, they're interested in, you know, this ecstatic feelings and how do you, we just want to...
Because we're still dealing on the material platform of sense gratification.
Mm.
You know,
right.
It's just a little, you know, elevated department of sense gratification rather than getting it from some gross, you know...
Exactly, yeah.
...satisfaction like... You know, drinking beer.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
They're trying to step it up a little bit. Let's go to a more subtle level. Let's go to what seems like a deeper, you know, level, a more satisfying level, or satisfies on another level.
Yeah. Mm. And then so we bring that tendency into into the spiritual life as well.
Well, everything. Yeah. Mm. Right. But the beauty of this process of bhakti yoga is it purifies regardless of your motivation, regardless of your, you know, desires or whatever you have going, you know. These mantras, you know, they don't discriminate. Oh, your motivation is not pure, so therefore, you know, we're not going to do anything for you, but... Oh, yours is more pure. We'll do a little more for you. Mm. You know, it's like an all-encompassing mercy. That's how it described. Like the rain cloud. It rains on the rocks. It rains on the desert. It rains on the sea. You know, it doesn't discriminate. You know, it just rains on. And if it falls on the fertile soil with the seeds in the ground, then they sprout. Then they produce some fruit. If it rains on the ocean... You know, it doesn't have any effect. There's no effect there. If it rains on the rocks, it's the same idea. They're barren. They don't have any result.
Yeah.
You know, so it's when this is actually the Lord's mercy of transcendental sound. When it rains on the fertile soil, whoever that individual may be, then there will be some fruit. But even if the soil is not fertile, the example is not perfect, because even if the soil is not fertile, it purifies anyway, and that infertile soil can become fertile. You know, it can have a completely different change on that person. Make it so they're not the same person they used to be. And they may not even know that. See, it may not be so dynamic. You know, it's just, you know, gradually, you know, you just start experiencing it different or feeling different, or another desire comes, a higher interest.
Because that's what I was going to say. If we aren't feeling like that, which I... can relate to, then like how do we, if you don't feel anything, if you don't have that, then how do you progress then? Because you don't notice, and you know what I mean, like you don't notice that change then. So how do you, what is it that motivates you to keep doing this if you are...
Well, that depends on the individual. That's why we have a philosophy that explains these things. You know, let's back to another example. You know, we have read in whatever place we read it that vitamin C is good for you, that it boosts your immune system, it protects you from colds and whatever, see? So therefore, you should take vitamin C.
Yeah.
And you should take 1,000 milligrams a day at least. Okay, so you read that. So you're curious enough or convinced enough or believe it enough to start your 1,000 milligrams a day regime. Do you feel different? Oh, wow, today I feel completely different than yesterday.
Probably not.
You know? And 1 week later, man, this stuff really, really works. No, you don't, you know, in most cases, you don't feel any difference.
Mm.
You know? You got some faith in this enough to just, you believe it. So you do it with the idea that it's protecting you.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what the philosophy is.
Mm.
But you don't really experience that. And then down the road somewhere, oh, it's supposed to protect you from colds, right? You get a cold. You know, you get a, you know, stuffy nose, you get some fever and everything. Do you get angry at the vitamin C and throw it out the window? Just stupid vitamin C, it's all a lie, it doesn't work. No, because you've got some faith in the philosophy. You double the dose.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, now I need more. So instead of 1,000 milligrams, you take 2 or 3 or 5 a day.
Mm.
You know? Why? Because you believe it.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow, someone convinced you. And so therefore, you're running on intelligence. You're not running on experience. You know? Mm. And even if you don't get well right away, you're thinking, well, if I wasn't taking vitamin C, I'd probably be a lot worse.
Mm.
You know, I'm sick, but I'm not as sick as I would be if I didn't take it.
Yeah.
You know, you've got all kinds of things that are all based on this idea of vitamin C is good for you.
Yeah.
It protects you. It boosts your immune system and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
So if we hear these teachings, and we have some, you know, faith or acceptance or belief in the teaching, you chant anyway, you know. You're for it? No. You know, you're feeling better than you've ever felt? No. You know, well, why are you chanting? Because I believe it's good for me.
Mm.
See, I believe this is what I should be doing.
Mm. And
That takes you on. And of course, the purification is taking place. You know, that's going to be automatic. And eventually, you know, you might just start thinking, yeah, you look back on your life, you know, for the last however long it was since you started, and you go, well, yeah, I have changed a little bit.
Mm.
It was slow, it was gradual, but now I kind of just feel different. I think different. I see the world in a different way.
Mm.
You know, things that are important to me now were not on the list at all before.
Yeah.
And things that were so important before, now it's like not so important anymore.
Yeah.
You know, or yeah, some situation occurred that before would have been just really, really hard for me to get through. And now it wasn't that difficult.
Yeah.
You know, just things are gradually changing.
And I guess the point is then that it's not only based on the immediate experience that you have, because if you go on that, then you will look for the short term and maybe end up in these seemingly spiritual things that are not really spiritual. But if, I mean, you have the other process of listening to people who know when you have faith in them and what more. I know there are various of those others than direct experience. I mean, there are so many other tools in this toolbox of finding the truth that we can use, not just my sensual experience, which is very limited.
And you know, it's not uncommon for certain people to hear what we say and chant and so on, and then go and or they're already doing it or start doing another thing. And sometimes they will come back and say, well, yeah, I tried other things and it just wasn't quite the same as this.
Yeah.
And I don't really know how to explain it, but I just somehow understand this is superior.
Yeah.
That can happen.
Yeah.
It has happened many times, but of course it doesn't happen like that for everybody. Some people might do something else and go, well, I like this better.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, that's why we have freedom of choice.
Yeah.
To do whatever, you know, we want to do.
Yeah. Well, I mean, to me, it's like when I, now it's like the first time in my life that I can clearly see like the, they call it the red thread. I don't know if that's an expression in English, but you can see like the core, the whatever has been with you through life and taught you the lessons that you needed to arrive at the point where you are now. Like I can see it through the developments that I've had, like that it just all makes sense to lead me to where I am now, and the gradual evolution, like you say, has been there and to provide me this opportunity that I have right now. And then that makes me know that this is superior than that, because I just see how, you know, one thing led to another and now I'm here.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. that's how it is. And on the other hand, some people, the first time they chant or they do have some major experience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that they've had, have not had before.
Yeah.
You know, it's so individual. You know, some people don't feel anything. Some people feel so much. You know, I've seen it just take over people on the first day.
I know. You know? I know. Yeah.
And I remember we were doing a program in Crimea. And it was on the Black Sea, and it was Atmosphera. It's a band, a mantra band, we'll call it. Atmosphere was doing a concert, and it was very informal, just a little stage, and, you know, people were just, it was on a, you know, they call it a boardwalk or a promenade or where people were just walking back and forth. And people were just stopping by and listening. And I saw this one girl walk up, and she just stand there. She's kind of curious what's going on. The music was really good, of course. Atmosphere is always amazing.
Yeah.
And she was listening, and then, you know, she kind of starts moving with the music. And, you know, pretty soon she's getting more and more involved. And then, you know, she starts going like this and like this, and, you know, she's just having all kind of emotional, you know, reactions. And, you know, then they stopped, and I was just standing kind of right beside her, and she just turned to me and said, I don't know what's going on here, but I just feel so strong, you know, I don't know even why I'm feeling like this. You know, she just had some experience like that.
Mm-hmm.
She couldn't even explain it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was her experience, but there was a lot of other people there that, oh, they were into the music, the beat, the, you know, they were dancing, or they were just watching and basically looked like no reaction or whatever. But this one girl, she was probably in her 20s. I mean, it had a profound effect on her.
Yeah.
So again, can't. You can't say it's the same for everybody, because nothing's the same for everybody.
Right. And it doesn't mean that it's not having the effect, or that it's better than anything else. Like you don't have to expect that to happen or expect nothing to happen. I mean, because it's not based on.
Well, yeah, the everybody outer... there that was listening got benefited. No question.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So.
Hmm.
Again, that's the amazing beauty of transcendental sound. It just works on all living entities.
Mm-hmm.
All living entities. Yeah. I just read something just today, just before we came together
here, mm-hmm.
about this this person. I can't remember his first name, but Flynn is his last name. He was in the Trump administration, you know, and then he got, you know, put in jail for you know, lying about not speaking to the Russians, all kind of political stuff. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And anyway, he was pardoned, and he's out now. But he just made a statement because he's now, you know, back in, you know, some level of influence, I'll say. Mm-hmm. He's not in any political position, but he's in a position of influence. And he said that we should have, you know, one America. This is, of course, in relation to America. In the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of America, it says, one nation under God with liberty and justice for all.
Mm-hmm.
That's the end of that pledge. And he said we should have one nation under God, one religion under God. And, of course, he's referring to Christianity. So what he's saying is that America should be one religion. That means, and the Constitution of America is a very strong clause in there that says freedom of religion. Every American will have freedom of religion,
mm-hmm.
You see. You can choose, you know, this religion, another religion, another. But he's trying to say one religion, you know. So this is kind of how people think of religion. If you're not Christian, then you can't be here, kind of thing.
Yeah, exclusive. Yeah.
Which is totally against the whole concept of spiritual life. That's their idea of religion, you know.
Mm.
It's a team. It's a sectarian belief. If it's in America, it should be, yeah, according to him, all Christians, you know, and that's all. And so you can see how far off people are from understanding what religion even means, you know.
Yeah, and
real religion is the science of the relationship between the individual soul and the supreme soul, the individual person and the supreme person. That's what religion is.
Yeah. What do you call that? Do you call that Christianity? Do you call that? I mean, what label can categorize that for everyone? And you know, there's no label that
Bhakti
catches
yoga.
That.
Yeah. Because it means the relationship of devotion between the individual person and the supreme person.
Mm.
So that's what all the wonderful, perfect teachers taught, you know. So, you know, supposedly, you know, this person's promoting this Christian religion only, you know, and of course that's based on, supposedly based on the teachings of Lord Jesus Christ.
Mm.
And Lord Jesus Christ wasn't a Christian, you know, and he didn't teach Christianity. You know, there was no Christianity when he taught. There was no such thing. It didn't exist.
Mm.
See, if you want to know what religion he was in the category of thinking like that, he was a Jew because he was born in a Jewish society where the predominating, quote, religion was Judaism. But he didn't teach Judaism. He taught love for God.
Mm.
And that was what got him in trouble with the Jews.
Yeah.
You see, oh, you're telling people to love God and not be a good Jew. So, you know, they went to the extreme measure, you know, and persecuted him. So this is why, you know, we have to understand what real religion is, and that's what you asked in the beginning.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's nothing other than the science of the relationship between the individual person and the supreme person.
Yeah.
And that's if we understand that, if we really understand that, then that would protect us from or steer us away from the popular teachings that there is no supreme person.
Mm-hmm.
If you really understand what I just said about what is true religion, then if there's a so-called teaching that says there is no supreme person, you would know, well, you know, something, you know, missing here.
Yeah. Yeah. Then it makes, I mean, it's love. That's it's a science of developing any relationship with anyone is based on love. The loss of love.
It has to be. And that's why the relationships are so temporary and fragile now, because that's the missing element.
I see that.
You know, you come in, you have a good fling, and then you move on, because
exactly. It's
not about love. It's about, back to the idea, personal sense enjoyment, you know. What do I get out of it? I get a full experience of euphoric rush of, you know, sexual energy or whatever it is. And, you know, then I, like a honeybee moving from one flower to the other, you know.
Yeah.
And that's just a throwaway society we have now. It's just, you know, cheap and shallow and, you know, very... very unfulfilling.
Exactly. And very hurtful for people. I guess we should end soon, but I just wanted to, you know, it's hard to say, like, in terms of my experience, but I sincerely feel, the more that I, because I teach yoga, obviously, like, for many years now, and just the amount of people that are now struggling with mental problems and with fatigue and with stress and with all of these things, it's just much more than before, really. That's my experience, at least. So apparently some things...
That more people are struggling with that?
Yeah. The more people are, much more. It's more much more prevalent. That's my experience, at least.
Yeah. Well, I think your experience is valid, because every data bank and every, you know, statistical survey and everything else confirms it.
Shows it, yeah.
You know, all these adverse negative aspects of modern life are increasing. You know, and, you know, the people who are supposedly dealing with that, the doctors of this department of the society are overwhelmed.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, they can't keep up with the load, you know, the demand is too high.
No.
So something's missing. A big part of what we need in life is obviously missing. I mean,
Exactly. That's what I wanted to.
Yeah. So maybe next time, or one of the future programs, we can kind of address this idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's do that.
Yeah,
something is missing. I think that's
because it's very relevant, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh.
Thank you all.
Good. So yeah. So I just want to say, in closing, that the things I described are on the highest level of the development of the soul's spiritual perfection. But that's not where we start. No, you don't. You know, there's a saying, you know, our Breaking Trail podcast idea, you know, you don't look at the top of the mountain and think, gee, that's so high and so far and
exactly.
So different, but I can never do it.
Exactly.
You start at the bottom and you take one step at a time. One step at a time. Slowly, gradually, moving up, you see. And because if you look at the top, you defeat yourself in the beginning. You won't even start. Well, what's the point? I'll never make it.
Mm. Yeah.
You know. So if you look at what I described as, oh, well, I'll never make it, you know. Like you pointed out, this seems like too much for a lot of people. Well, I'm just giving you the ideas, and then you start with the first step. Don't worry about the goal up there. The goal is the next step. And then the goal after that is the next step.
Yeah.
And that's all. And it's nobody's, you know, standing there with a stopwatch saying, oh, you know, you're going too slow here. Pick up the pace. You know, it's different than that.
No, it's freedom.
So, yeah, we're not trying to intimidate anybody. That's just the point.
Yeah, exactly. Who was I discussing that with? But anyway, it's not, we don't have time to discuss that. But yeah, it's not fear-based. We're not trying to tell people to do this out of fear. You know, you're going to go to hell or if you don't do this and you have to do this otherwise.
It's not, it's not fear-based. It's, enthusiasm-based.
Yeah.
Wow, you know, there's a better life. Yeah. Okay, Reuben, I think we better end with our, you know, kirtan.
Chant, yeah. I'm ready.
And the mantra is the same. Gauranga Hari Bol. And... And when we chant, you know, we're hoping that you're chanting along with us. I chant as the leader, and then you respond, and you just relax and chant, you know. Just relax, listen, and repeat. Just chant, and that's all. Nothing more. Nothing more at all. Just that. Thank you.
incredible.
All right. So thank you all very much for joining us
tuning in.
The program, for the kirtan.
Yeah. Yeah. For your attention. Thank you, Balakira.
Always a pleasure.
Yeah.
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 Ruben and I get to meet once a week.
Discuss this, I guess. So
talk about good stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Appreciate it, Palakia. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. By the way, the background noise that you may have heard on Ruben's end is rain on the roof.
Yeah.
He told me it's raining very hard right there.
Yeah. And Tromsø isn't that cold as you
raining.
Think. It's huh?
What'd you say?
No, I was going to say Tromsø isn't that, you know, it's really, really far north, but we have the Gulf Stream, so it's not that cold. Like, it's middle November and we actually have rain. It's not unusual.
Yeah.
But it's...
And here in Kazakhstan, it snowed. So you got rain there, snow here, and warm hearts.
Exactly. I was going to say, but same heart.
Yeah.
Right. Thank you, Valakia.
Okay, everybody. Once again, thank you all so much. And we'll be back next week.
Yeah. Thank you, Chintamani, as well. Slava. Yeah. Thank you, Valakia.
Slava's always doing the stuff necessary. He's the magician. Yeah.
Yeah. So,
and, okay, guys, we could drag it on. It's always fun, but thank you so much.
Yep. See you next
Namaste,
week.
Namaste. Haribol.
Namaste. Haribol. So, as always, we are very happy for anyone who is listening to the very end. Thank you for doing that, and thank you for being inspired. Thank you for being here, really. You are appreciated. And we do appreciate every single person who's out there listening, despite us not being able to communicate you directly in this way. You know, it's kind of like a dialogue that you can tune into, but we are very much, you know, persons ourselves, and we'd be delighted and very happy to hear your comments, your feedback, your thoughts, any questions that you have. You know, we'd be happy to bring them up. So, and you know, one day if you're in Norway, then perhaps I'll see you someplace. I'm sometimes traveling around like I am right now, so who knows where we meet. Or else you're welcome to come to Tromsø to see the Arctic and Northern Lights. Season is kind of almost over now, but you know, we have a midnight sun as well coming up in the summer, so that's an open invitation. You're welcome to join our meditations and yoga and, you know, yeah, kirtans. Anyway, for now, I guess most of you do not have that possibility, so feel free to keep, or even if you do come, of course, keep tuning in here. You can join our email list to stay updated, and you can make mini donations. There is a possibility of joining this Patreon page that we have, where you can make monthly small donations so that we can keep this running and keep sharing it to more people. And you can, of course, also take part in the sharing if you, you know, share this to your friends and let them know. So stay true to yourself and dare to break trail.